Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Chuck Romine, the director of the NIST Information Technology Laboratory. Chuck, it's great to have you on.
It's great to be with you.
Well, you've been the head of the NIST IT lab for almost a year now. Let's talk a little bit about that transition. You came in at a time when the lab has been getting a lot of attention, a lot more responsibility, probably not as much as authority as people would say, but a lot more, you're being looked to do a lot more work within the federal government. So give me a sense, how's your transition been going?
I've really enjoyed it. It's been terrific to get a handle on what the Information Technology Laboratory does, the quality of the staff that we have here. I'm actually very lucky because my predecessor, Sita Furlani, who retired last year, gave me a fantastic organization to lead. And I've known Sita for a long time, and I used to tell her kind of facetiously that I thought she had the best job in the federal government. Turns out I was right. So it's just been a great rush for me. It's a tremendous privilege for me to lead this organization.
Has there been a big adjustment for you? I mean, because previously you were, I think, the deputy director, and now you're the director. But so sometimes it's like, okay, you just make that next step. But what's the biggest adjustment been?
So I've had a lot of roles here at NIST. I came on initially in the Information Technology Lab as an associate director working for CETA, my predecessor, and got kind of snatched up by the director's office. Dr. Gallagher wanted me on some special assignments that I worked on his behalf. And I now feel like I've sort of come back home. Information technology is kind of the space that I'm comfortable in. And the opportunity now to have a direct impact on the mission that we undertake, I think, and providing some direction is just a real thrill for me.
If people aren't familiar with the NIST IT lab, let's talk a little bit about your mission. How does the lab work?
We've got several related missions. The mission of NIST as a whole is to provide research and technology in standards in order to support innovation and economic competitiveness for U.S. industry. That's sort of explicitly our mission. And the Information Technology Laboratory inherits that mission, of course. The way I like to characterize it is I've heard NIST described as sort of industry's national laboratory in that sense, that industry relies upon NIST for that kind of innovation and standards development. So in the information technology space, the way I like to describe it is we have two fundamental missions. We're a metrology laboratory. We do measurement. And so we do measurement of IT systems, measurement for IT. But we also investigate information technologies that can enhance the rest of NIST's measurement mission. And so we really have sort of two related missions going on here in the Information Technology Lab.
When you talk about two related missions, you have the measurement side and then you have the IT side that kind of enhances the measurement. Take me down in the next level. When you talk about the measurement of IT, for instance, let's pick an easy one, IT security, for instance. Mm-hmm. That's something you guys do a lot of work around. Your goal is to provide guidance to help measure IT security within agencies, for instance. Is that a good way to think about it?
Yeah, that's one of the sort of key examples or classic examples that we pursue is we provide guidelines to federal agencies. These are often adopted by the private sector as well because they are high quality standards and guidelines that we work on, and industry has recognized the value of that. So I would say that's true. We have an investment in sort of the basic science and understanding of cybersecurity as well, and that's part of our fundamental or basic mission. So that's kind of the measurement of IT side. With regard to using information technology to enhance our measurement mission, we think of information technology in the IT lab very broadly. We do fundamental research in computational mathematics and statistics, for example. And one of our missions is to work with the other laboratories here at NIST to apply those capabilities in mathematics and statistics to help them strengthen their measurement science. And so that's kind of the other side of the coin.
Whenever I ask this question about, you know, talk about your mission, there's always so much more that comes out about what an agency does or what an organization does, because you always see them from one specific viewpoint. When you look at your mission areas, it's not just cybersecurity or IT. When you guys get into the smart grid, you get into health IT. Are there some areas that people don't realize that you guys are play a big role in?
I do think the breadth of our mission has grown dramatically over the last decade or so. And our contributions are running the gamut, as you point out, from smart grid. We do biometrics. We do software quality assurance. There are all kinds of things that we do in various spaces. The health IT space is a big one. Of course, cybersecurity has been a longstanding one. So you alluded to this in the beginning when you introduced me, the idea that the Information Technology Lab has gotten a lot more attention and a lot more. What I would say, there are some challenges that we've been assigned that we have to remain very, very strong in order to meet those challenges.
So let's talk about those employees who are meeting those challenges. What's the size of your staff at the IT lab? And you guys depend on a lot of visiting fellows and other kind of more than just contractors to meet your mission. So give me a sense of the breakdown of the employees, contractors, even visiting fellows.
We have about 370 or so federal staff here in the Information Technology Lab. That's supplemented by about another 170 or so guest researchers at any one time. As you can imagine, that fluctuates quite a bit as people come in and as they leave. And one of the things that's outstanding here is our federal staff are of such high quality that the guest researchers around the country and around the world actually want to come here to work with us. And so that's a big draw. And one of the challenges that I have is ensuring that we maintain that influx of the very best talent that we can find around the world, and at the same time really build and ensure that we maintain a very, very strong core federal team so that we can meet all of these challenges.
I want to talk a little bit about those visiting scholars. Where do you find them? Do you reach out? Do you put an announcement out, like, you know, a normal kind of like internship type of thing? Hey, come work at NIST for a year or 2 years or whatever the length is.
I would say the vast majority of our guest researchers arrive principally by word of mouth, although there are sort of formal programs that we manage as well for ensuring that pipeline. The other thing is, as we form very strong relationships with certain academic partners, there's a sort of natural pipeline that gets established, and so we're able to take advantage of that as well.
And from an employee standpoint, being responsible to hire employees that are in short supply, it must be the mission that you can put out there. Hey, we may not be able to pay you the most, but look at all the cool things you get to do.
I think that's exactly right. The fact that we have really fascinating problems on which we can work, that we work with some of the finest scientists, not just within the IT lab, but also across the rest of NIST, I think is a big draw for our ability to attract scientists. And while I certainly don't want to be complacent about this, I do worry sort of on a daily basis about how we're going to maintain this pipeline of excellent staff. In truth, the fact that we are such a terrific place to work really works in our favor, and we're able to attract top-notch talent.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into your priorities. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My special guest today is Chuck Romine, the director of the NIST IT Lab. I'm Jason Miller. We'll be right back.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Chuck Romine, the director of the NIST Information Technology Lab. Now, Chuck, before break, we're talking a little bit about the lab, the mission of the lab, the employees. Let's talk about priorities, because one of the things that you guys put out on a regular basis are special publications, standards that everyone kind of looks to, as we talked about earlier, that really set the tone, set the way ahead for both government and industry. So what are some of your biggest priorities coming up over the next 6 or 9 months?
Well, some of these, of course, are continuations of existing priorities. I think it's safe to say that the cybersecurity issue is not going to go away for quite a long time. So we're going to be emphasizing additional work in cybersecurity, particularly the Cybersecurity Center of Excellence that we've established, and I can talk some about that, as well as the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, or NSTIC. With regard to other priorities, as you know, the administration has emphasized cloud computing, and of course that's directly in our wheelhouse, and so we have spent a great deal of time in collaboration with other federal agencies in the establishment of a federal cloud computing program with an eye toward trying to facilitate the adoption of cloud computing in a safe and secure manner by federal agencies. So those are going to continue, but we also have an emphasis in many other areas. Some of those involve, mobility and the issue of big data, for example. All of these, by the way, are intertwined. So we've got, if you look at cloud computing, mobility, big data, security, all of those things have very large intersections. And so I think one of the advantages of a place like ITL at NIST is that we have the breadth and the scope and the capability across our staff to not only address these challenges, but also explore the intersections among them.
Well, let me jump back, because I definitely want to talk security a little bit, but let me start with cloud. I think that's one of the big hot topics. Don Leaf, who is running the cloud operation, recently left to go over to become the deputy CIO at Labor. Where are you going with cloud? What's the next thing that people should look at from the NIST IT lab around cloud computing?
So you're right. Having Don leave us and take an exciting position at the Department of Labor was a loss for us, and I'm very, very grateful for the effort that she expended in putting NIST on the map in the cloud space. We do have a breadth of talented staff, and I've asked my associate director for program implementation, Dr. Chris Greer, to fill that spot in the interim. And of course, Bob Bond will continue to be the program manager there, leading a lot of the efforts in that program under Chris's direction. With regard to next steps, we've made a lot of progress with respect to cloud frameworks, and particularly the cloud security issues associated with the implementation of the cloud, with our partnership with the DoD and the CIO Council, and in particular with GSA. They've been terrific partners with us on that, establishing the FedRAMP program, for example. The other thing I would say is that with respect to cloud computing and also big data, we have a workshop that's coming up in the middle of January that I think is going to be very exciting, because it's the annual cloud workshop, but in this case, we've combined it with a workshop on big data to sort of emphasize the overlap of those two very important areas.
Let's talk about cloud and big data for a second, because that's one area where you're seeing a lot more attention. First, it was, let's move everything to the cloud. Okay, now we're in the cloud. Oh my God, look at all this data we're getting. What are you guys doing around cloud and big data? Is there a publication coming? Is there I'm not sure if standards is the right word. Is there some help coming from NIST around how to deal with the idea of big data in the cloud?
We're continuing our emphasis on publications of guidelines, and I don't have very specifics on when these things will emerge. But we do have guidelines in the works with regard to cloud. In the case of big data, we're actually a little bit more in the early stages. And one of the exciting things from my perspective about big data is, you know, we're a metrology laboratory, and the word big in big data connotes that this is a measurement problem, at least in part. And so we don't really have to work very hard to tie big data to our mission. The challenge really, in part, is there are a lot of different concepts about what big data actually represents. So we're going to be seeking to clarify that in this big data component of the joint workshop in January.
I don't think big is a big enough descriptor, you know, it's just not big enough. Let's talk a little bit about mobile for a second, another hot topic we see across government. A lot of CIOs are looking at it. What's the status of some of your efforts around mobile security specifically?
We're taking a pretty close look at mobile security. As you can imagine, the form factor that we're talking about here, which is significantly smaller than even the smallest laptops, in general, you know, laptops are part of the mobile space, but we're really talking in many ways about smartphones and other kinds of devices. And that presents a bit of a challenge to us. The computing capabilities of the devices, although they're growing, are generally significantly smaller. And so things like heavyweight encryption, for example, are a little bit more challenging for devices like that. So we do have some investment in lightweight encryption. Sometimes we don't like to use the word lightweight. We really prefer encryption in constrained environments. Lightweight seems to connote that the encryption has some flaw. But in fact, we're really talking about solid and strong encryption, but just in constrained environments. We also have efforts in forensic science for mobile devices. And so trying to understand the security, sort of what's gone on in the past with respect to these devices, is another challenge that we're undertaking.
One of the things about the encryption of mobile devices is the idea of how do you make it connect with the HSPD 12 or PIV card. And I know that's something that, talking to some of your colleagues, they were looking at, they're trying to, okay, how can we put this in the revision of the, I think it's FIPS 201. What is the status of FIPS 201 and how's mobile going to come in there?
So I can't give you too much of a status update with regard to when the next revision of 201 is going to be coming out. But what I can tell you is that mobile is a serious concern there, particularly, as you can imagine, the kind of PIV card form factor isn't really suitable for use with a lot of mobile devices. And so one of the things that I think we're looking at is whether we can provide what we'd call derived credentials, that is, credentials that trace back to the PIV card but are digital in form, so that we don't have to worry about trying to combine two form factors that really don't fit well together.
I know that the Defense Department, for instance, tried the Bluetooth reader, but the people complained, well, I had to carry something else with more battery power in my pocket. And if I don't have the battery, you know, if I'm not plugged in, if I don't have a charge, that's troubling. I think that the DoD also tried to push together, or what's it called, a Quiji device with some kind of reader. And that was a little too bulky. Is that why the derived credential is becoming such a focus?
I think that's exactly right. So this touches on another aspect of the research that we do in ITL, which is research on usability of IT systems. And you've just touched on two examples where in an attempt to merge the sort of FIPS 201 credential with a mobile device, a couple of approaches have been tried that from the usability perspective are not particularly strong. And so our research in human factors and usability here, I think, is one way that we can seek to solve those kinds of problems. And I think the derived credential, if we go that route, and I don't want to signal too strongly that we're decided on that, but if the derived credential is the way that we go, I think that's one way of overcoming that form factor issue so that the bulk is not at stake. On the other hand, how we transfer that derived credential and use it to ensure security in that environment is still something that we need to deal with.
All right, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. Come back. We're going to talk cybersecurity. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is a special edition of the program. My special guest today is Chuck Romine, the director of the NIST IT Lab.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also,
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right. But did you know
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about
OMB's digital strategy?
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Chuck Romine, the director of the NIST IT Lab. Chuck, before break, we're talking a lot about your priorities. We talked mobile, we talked cloud, and now I want to jump into cyber, which is probably one of your larger priorities, or at least the area that you guys get a lot of attention for. So let's start with the revision, the latest revision to 853, what you guys call Rev 4. What's the status of that?
So 853 Rev 4, special publication, is in process. I can't give you an exact date of when it's going to emerge, but I can tell you that we're encouraged. Things are looking very good. We're obviously, as we do with all of our publications, we've submitted it for a public review, and we are dispositioning those comments and ensuring that we get everything just right before we actually issue this as a guideline. So we're excited about it. I think it's coming. It won't be too much longer.
Based on the comments you guys gotten so far, based on the initial draft, do you see huge changes? Do you see changes in specific areas? For instance, mobile we talked about, or cloud we talked about. Continuous monitoring, obviously, another big push from the Obama administration. Are those some of the areas that maybe you see some of the changes, maybe whether big or small?
Well, that's right. There are, as you know, the IT landscape is an incredibly fast-moving landscape, and I think we have to be diligent in updating these publications and in all the work that we do to reflect that we're staying up to date and current. And some of the things that you just mentioned, particularly continuous monitoring, is a key issue for us in the future of providing security controls and ways of monitoring those controls. And so I think that's you can expect that there's going to be a significant amount of interest in that on the administration and on NIST's part.
Do you guys, the IT Lab, specifically around cyber, get a lot of push from the outside coming into NIST, for instance, whether it's the administration per se or vendors or Congress? or interested parties, academics who say, you know, you can't do this, you need to do that. And how do you deal with that pushback or at least that desire to influence?
We get a certain amount of external input from a variety of stakeholders, but we're very fortunate in the sense that we're recognized as being sort of world leaders in the cybersecurity arena. And our mission with respect to providing the very best technical advice, independent of sort of policy issues, we really don't do very much in the policy space. But we seek to ensure that the very best technical solutions and technical advice makes its way into policy considerations. And that's really what we're being requested to do by the administration, by Congress, and by other stakeholders. So I would say it's not common for me to have to worry about undue pressures at all in that arena. We're really recognized as being the technical experts.
Does that make your job a little easier when it comes to cyber? Because there's so many different opinions. I mean, if you think about what's going on with cybersecurity legislation on the Hill, just as an example, I know you guys don't have a dog in that fight per se, but you know, you have one side that says you need more regulation, one side says you need less regulation. I mean, you guys could have that same kind of challenge when you're saying, okay, well, here's the next set of standards, we believe X should happen. Well, someone could come in and say, we don't think X should happen that way, it should be Y or however it works. Are you guys able to get yourself out of that back and forth?
From the perspective of those kinds of policy discussions, those really take place, the input really takes place at the Department of Commerce level, and NIST is a bureau in the Department of Commerce. And so to the extent that we as a bureau provide any input, it's technical expertise that we provide to the department, and the department then can take that technical advice and technical expertise and determine on what basis they may wish to engage in discussions about the different kinds of policy decisions that are being made.
As far as other cyber efforts going on, obviously you have the Center of Excellence, you have the NSTIC program. Let's start with NSTIC. Give us a status update of NSTIC. It's making some progress. I see some tweets going out about the meetings and the different pilots that have been awarded. Where do you see NSTIC going over the next year or so?
This is a really exciting program for us, and I have to give kudos to Jeremy Grant, the manager of that program. He's done an exceptional job of getting the community galvanized to really support this program. We're very excited that in fairly short order over the last year, we have made enormous progress in establishing the steering group as a private sector-led entity, which is one of the goals of NSTIC, of course, is having private sector leadership of this whole establishment of an identity management ecosystem. And then the grants, as you know, went out just recently, and we're very excited about those as well. We got some very high-quality submissions, and we're able to fund a significant number of grants that we think will catalyze some very interesting research and development in this space.
I know NSTIC is getting a lot of attention because of everyone hates their passwords. I mean, let's get down to brass tacks a little bit here. From an NSTIC perspective, a lot of people are being a little impatient about it. What's taking so long? Why can't we get it going? Do you see the progress? Are you happy with the progress of NSTIC? I mean, you said that Jeremy obviously is doing a wonderful job, but are you seeing that the change is happening?
I think it is. I'm just as impatient as everyone else. I occasionally will count up the number of passwords that I have to use. I think I'm up to 50 or 60 now. And so with varying kinds of requirements on the length and distribution of characters and so on, nobody's happy with that state of affairs. And in fact, we have some research in the information technology lab on the effectiveness of passwords. But with regard to establishing an entire ecosystem, this is going to take some time, and I think we've actually been encouraged by the extreme rapidity with which we've been able to make progress in this past year. It'll be another few years. As you know, this is a program that is intended to ramp down. We're going to declare success, assuming that we can get some successful development work done by the grantees. We're going to make sure that this is not a permanent kind of program for NIST. So I think I'm very encouraged by the progress, and I think we're going to see some exciting things emerging from these grants.
The other big area of cybersecurity you guys recently jumped into was a center of excellence. Describe what that is, how it's going to work, and why is that important to NIST?
So the National Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, which we started in 2012 with appropriations of $10 million, we've stood it up now. It's actually active and running. And the way I like to describe it is the goal of the Center of Excellence is to accelerate the adoption of security technologies, both in the federal government, but particularly in the private sector. We want to demonstrate in our space in the Cybersecurity Center of Excellence the feasibility of an integrated platform of security technologies that can provide a more secure environment for various sectors, whether it's the healthcare sector or financial services or other specific sectors. So we're using specific use cases that are sector-oriented to drive that kind of research and development.
The center's being set up in the sense that you're going to have the private sector come in with ideas, or you guys are going to put out, for lack of a better word, a broad agency announcement to say, we want to look at the smart grid. Come give us some ideas of what part of the smart grid we should look at. How, is that the way it's going to work, or how's it going to work?
That's exactly right. So the way that we're intending to do this to ensure the broadest possible engagement is that we're going to issue calls, essentially, or statements, in part collecting ideas for what the use cases ought to be. And then once a use case is decided by the center staff, then we'll go out again with a request for technologies that can contribute in certain areas based on that use case. So it's far less a center of excellence for doing sort of research in a broad array of new technologies and much more trying to accelerate the adoption of existing or emerging technologies in an integrated platform for specific use.
What are the first set of use cases? Can you describe them a little bit?
We're going to solicit ideas for use cases from the community, but we had to, in order to stand up quickly, we had to bootstrap that issue. And so we've already decided on a couple of use cases. First one was in the health IT space. And broadly speaking, the use case is trying to address the need of small healthcare providers to be able to transfer in a secure manner, subject to HIPAA regulations, which are a little bit different than the standard security regulations, to transfer information to other providers or to hospitals. And so I think the goal there is to try to figure out what the underlying techniques are and what the underlying technologies can be used in order to make this cost effective for small providers. And I think that's really one of the goals of that particular use case. Another one is exploring the continuous monitoring for federal systems. And a third one was one that actually came to us. There was a very large manufacturer in the U.S. that heard about this cybersecurity center, and they came to us with a use case and a problem, and I think we're going to tackle that one as well. So it'll be in the manufacturing space, trying to secure their manufacturing processes.
All right, sounds like we could talk a lot longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Chuck Romine, the director of the NIST Information Technology Laboratory. Chuck, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
It was a great pleasure. Thanks very much.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.